Welcome, Pewter Report readers and listeners, to another edition of the Pewter Nation podcast. Scott Reynolds here, flying solo as we dive into Bucks free agency. It is Thursday afternoon. I'm recording this podcast after press conferences from Breshad Perriman and Bradley Pinion, or as I like to call him, Bradley Pinham Deep, the new punter in Tampa Bay. And new SR's Fab 5 coming out tomorrow. Make sure that you check out that column. I've got some extra insight in that column that I'm not going to share with you here today. Probably do a little bit of crossover, but some fresh content there for you. But Deion Buchanan, the Bucks' new nickel linebacker, and I call him nickel linebacker because he's a hybrid type player. He is a safety coming, well, he was a safety coming out of Washington State as a first-round pick by the Cardinals, and has morphed into this linebacker role. And because the Buccaneers play so much nickel defense about 70% of the time, especially in a conference, or I should say in a division, that has Drew Brees, Matt Ryan, and Cam Newton, and balls slinging all over the yard, the Buccaneers needed a linebacker that could cover. And that really suits Buchanan's skill set very well with his safety background. And with losing Quan Alexander, they needed a player that could come in and learn the system. And in this case, he knows it quite well, having played for Todd Bowles for 1 year, but has familiarity with the Cardinals staff out there. Larry Foote, who is the linebacker coach here in Tampa, now coming from Arizona with Bruce Arians. So there's a lot of familiarity with what Buchanan can bring to the Buccaneers and what he already knows from this coaching staff. So that should be a pretty seamless transition to Tampa Bay. And the expectation is right now that he'll be your nickel starter at the inside linebacker position, the money backer spot alongside Levante David. This does not preclude the Buccaneers from drafting a linebacker. That was a big question on Twitter that we tackled earlier this week when Buchanan signing was forecasted by PewterReport.com, and it ended up happening. With Quan Alexander's departure, you've added Buchanan. We also said they would re-sign Kevin Minter. They did. It's a smart move by this team because, like Buchanan, Minter spent plenty of time in Arizona playing for Todd Bowles. He was a draft pick in 2013 when Bowles arrived on the scene, second-round pick, I believe, out of LSU. So despite Minter and Buchanan coming to Tampa Bay, does not rule out the fact that the Buccaneers will draft another inside linebacker, and certainly doesn't preclude them from taking LSU's Devin White, maybe at number 5, or maybe trading down to get White, or Michigan's Devin Bush, who's a hell of a prospect as well. So rest assured, the Buccaneers aren't done at linebacker, and even at 211 pounds, if Buchanan can't hold up in base defense, which he might not play a bunch of base defense because of his lack of size, there will be other linebackers that will be added probably in the draft. And again, keeping an eye on Kendall Beckwith's situation. If you've read PewterReport.com, heard our podcast, you know Beckwith's career is in jeopardy. The team is not confident that he'll be able to return from that broken ankle injury that that apparently really sidelined him, which is quite sad because there were some people in the building that actually thought Kendall Beckwith, as a rookie, was a better middle linebacker prospect than Quan Alexander. Not saying that he was a better linebacker per se, but a better middle linebacker. And it would have been interesting to see how Beckwith would have fared last year. He certainly would have seen a ton of playing time, not just as the starting Sam linebacker, but when Quan went down after the Cleveland Browns game in game six, the Buccaneers linebacking core was just decimated with injuries. Beckwith would have gotten an awful lot of playing time and would have really positioned the team well, I think, if not for that ankle injury. But as it turns out, we'll see what Buchanan can do. I tweeted out earlier this week on our Pewter Report Twitter account, make sure you're following it if you're not, that he was a natural fit coming to the Buccaneers. The guy's got the word Buck and Cannon in his name. So it'll be interesting to see the play of a 211-pound linebacker. He's really undersized, but a very good athlete, very strong for his size, very good coverage skills. So that was kind of, I think, one of the bigger signings that has happened so far. Not the splash signings that we saw over the last couple of years with Ryan Jensen coming last year, with Bo Allen and Mitch Unrein, and then Vinny Curry coming. And then, you know, before that you had, you've had Brent Grimes and Robert Ayers come. You've had DeSean Jackson 2 years ago, along with Chris Baker. So there have been a lot of splash signings that we kind of warned you guys would not be happening this year. And for good reason, because a lot of those splash signings simply haven't panned out. And that's not just here in Tampa. Usually around the league, when you try to build teams through free agency rather than supplement your team with free agency, that can lead to disaster. And a lot of the teams that are active in free agency the first couple of days are the same teams that usually pick in the top 10. And the Buccaneers wisely, I think, sat out, didn't overpay. We saw some ridiculous contracts, right? Some ridiculous numbers thrown out there at a lot of positions. The C.J. Mosley deal stands out as one that, and C.J. Mosley's a really good player, but we saw a lot of other players that just got crazy money that probably had no business getting that. But I'll stick with the Buccaneers. And some of the other guys that were signed, Breshad Perriman. I kind of dive a little bit into Perriman and his role and how that's going to affect the wide receiving core in Tampa Bay in the Fab Five. So if you if you're listening to this on Thursday, be sure you read the Fab Five. If you have already read the Fab Five, then you know what I'm talking about. But Perriman does bring some size and some speed. The biggest thing is the hands. That was a big Achilles heel for him, not just at Baltimore, but also at UCF. UCF, he did not have the most reliable hands. What really got him drafted in the first round was when he did catch the ball, he made big plays happen, and he had sub 4.3 speed. And at 6'2", 212 pounds, is a phenomenal athlete. But the biggest thing for Breshad Perriman is catching the ball and doing it on a consistent basis, because the speed that he has rivals that of DeSean Jackson, but DeSean Jackson had much better hands. And certainly he has the size over a player like Adam Humphries and the speed as well, but Humphries could catch the ball and catch it consistently and move the chains. So the Buccaneers are really kind of going a little bit more in potential than production here, but he certainly comes a heck of a lot cheaper at $4 million for your cap-conscious and cap-crunched Buccaneers than Adam Humphries got as a slot cornerback, making $9 million a year on average in Tennessee. So I think a pretty decent signing there. Bradley Pinion, slightly cheaper than Brian Anger at just under $3 million per year. But he also handles kickoff duties, and that's important because Cairo Santos does not have a strong leg, and we saw that certainly take part not just in long field goals last year, but also on kickoffs, where his kickoffs fell short too often, and that's not going to happen this year because Pinion's going to be handling those kickoff duties, and that's, I think, going to help the Bucs special teams out. He likes taking on that role. And, of course, Cairo Santos loves the fact that he'll just have to concentrate on extra points and field goals. And for a player that's had some injuries with his groin, the less kicking that Cairo Santos can do, the better. So not having to kick off 3, 4, 5, 6 times per game, I think that's going to help Cairo Santos's health and long-term status in Tampa Bay. But Cairo Santos won't be the only kicker in training camp. And I'm not talking about the foreign guy that they signed, Philip Anderson. I'm talking about the Buccaneers will be bringing in another kicker at some point in time. Maybe Matt Bryant. We'll see. But they will have some more legitimate competition and really make Cairo Santos earn that job, unlike last year when they handed the job to Chandler Catanzaro and he failed to keep that job. So having said that, those are your new free agent signings, Buchanan, Pinion, and Perriman. The team is also busy this week, starting with Donovan Smith before free agency, re-signing him. We talked about that on the last podcast. Peyton Barber comes back to a one-year deal. And Peyton's really betting on himself at this one-year deal, just over $2 million. The fact that the Buccaneers weren't willing to tender him with second-round compensation and pay him $3 million per year not only tells me that, yes, they were a little bit cap-crunched, so they wanted to go as cheap as possible with Barber for those cap considerations, but it also tells me that they're not married to this guy. And we've already seen Jason Light and Bruce Arians kind of get filled with some bluster. I saw that personally up in Indianapolis, and that's why I labeled that individual podcast I did live from the Combine, SR Calls BS in Indy, because it was a bunch of BS about DeSean Jackson. And when I had those conversations after interviewing Bruce and Jason up there in Indy with Greg Allman from The Athletic and Rick Stroud from the Tampa Bay Times, we all kind of came to the same conclusion. They're going to trade DeSean Jackson, and they did. And they didn't get a whole bunch for him, basically that sixth-round pick this year, and then having to surrender a seventh-round pick next year. But something is better than nothing. And I think this team is going to be far better off without DeSean Jackson because of his malcontent attitude and the fact that Jameis Winston simply can't hit him and there's no chemistry there. And I kind of dive into that in the Fab Five a little bit more, so I won't waste a lot of time talking about that right now. But certainly, I think a good deal to get something rather than nothing. The Buccaneers now have a pick in every round, 1 through 7. And I think that the Tampa Bay is going to be better off without DeSean Jackson and his attitude in Tampa Bay. And a lesson learned, hopefully, for Jason Light, no more divas and no more selfish players. Get the kind of players that are team players, the Chris Godwin types. Those are the guys, the Mike Evans, the Cam Brates. Those are the guys you want to build your team around. And I think that Jason Light is learning and growing as a general manager, and we were seeing signs of that this offseason and willing to deal DeSean Jackson and also, too, giving up on Quan Alexander. That knee is not anywhere close to being 100%, and there are some real concerns that Quan Alexander will start the season on the PUP list, okay? So you're paying a linebacker, over $13 million per year, $13.5 million per year, which is great for Quan. I mean, hats off to you, Quan. You certainly got John Lynch's ATM card and went to town. But there are some real concerns about that knee from Tampa Bay's perspective. And so once they were able to cross that threshold, Quan and his agent, Drew Rosenhaus, and I believe that threshold was around $10 million. I think that's what the Buccaneers were willing to pay to keep Quan. Once they crossed that, he was not going to return to Tampa. And I think that you saw in our writings on PeterReport.com about Humphreys and about Quan Alexander that we suspected that they were going to leave Tampa. And that's exactly what happened. And it's hard to pay for a player who's going to miss some time initially. And I talk about this in the Fab Five. I compare Lavonte David, who is the best linebacker in Tampa, not Quan, and Quan. And Quan Alexander has now missed 18 games in 4 seasons in Tampa Bay. And I want to say that in 7 seasons, Lavonte has missed 7 games. So Dirk Koetter got one thing right. There's a lot of things Dirk did wrong. Offensively, he did a lot of things right. But from a head coaching standpoint, one of the right things was calling it the right way, which is the best kind of ability is availability. You're no good to your team if you're always injured. And although Quan had a 4-game suspension for PED usage, he still missed 4 games during his rookie season. So you add up all those games, the 10 games last year with the ACL, the hamstring injuries the year before that, he's started a full complement of 16 games only once in his career, and that was back in 2016. So Quan Alexander's missed a lot of games. He's already going to miss some games, I believe, to start the season in San Francisco. And guess what? He's getting paid. He's getting that $13.5 million this year. He's on the clock, on the meter. That meter's running. And then how effective will Quan be back from that injury? And keep in mind, Quan also tore an ACL at LSU. So now he has two ACL tears, one on each leg, early on in his NFL career. One of those happened in college. The other one happened last year. But still, that's a bit of a red flag, and I don't blame the Buccaneers for passing on Quan Alexander. I know that this was a tough decision for Jason Light. Quan was the heartbeat of this team, very well liked. I liked him. I think Mark Cook expressed how he felt about Quan in his well-written column on PeterReport.com. The fans liked him. But I think at the end of the day, this was a maturation sign for Jason Light to really let two of the players that he really liked in Adam Humphries and Quan Alexander go out in free agency and sign elsewhere for bigger deals rather than try to keep those players and overpay and really put this team in even more of a salary cap strain, not just this year, but in years to come. Because you have some players on the horizon now. You've got Carl Nassib, who's in a contract year. Chris Godwin and O.J. Howard are going to be paid a lot over the next year or two. Obviously, Jameis Winston is playing on that fifth-year option this year. And who knows what his contract situation will be like next year, depending on how he does this year. But the Buccaneers need to have some flexible salary cap space, and they can't just keep re-signing everybody. And I love Quan. I'm telling you right now, I think Devin White is going to be a better linebacker in 2 years than Quan Alexander will be this year or next year. And if the Buccaneers end up drafting him at number 5, you heard it here first. We had it in our mock draft all the way dating back to January. And it makes a lot of sense. It made a lot of sense back then. It still makes a lot of sense right now. You know what else makes a lot of sense? Having lunch or dinner at Ford's Garage. That's right. I'm about ready to hit Ford's Garage this weekend up here in Wesley Chapel. And I love to get the barbecue brisket burger and a beer, usually a cold nose Duke's Brown Ale. They're from Jacksonville. And that's what I love about Ford's Garage is they've got a lot of local Florida breweries and a huge selection of craft beers in addition to all your domestic favorites. They've got a very vast selection of mixed drinks and cocktails and a ton of burger options for you to choose from. And you know Mark Cook likes the salmon. They've also got chicken dishes and nachos. Everything that your palate could desire at Ford's Garage. Plenty of locations around the Tampa Bay area. You'll find Mark down there at the Brandon location. They also have locations in Countryside, in West Chase, and Lakeland, St. Petersburg, Estero, Florida, Fort Myers. There's one out there at the Orlando Premium Outlet Malls now. There's one up in Dearborn, Michigan. So plenty of Ford's Garages. Find the one closest to you on FordsGarageUSA.com. We appreciate Ford's Garage sponsoring the Pewter Nation podcast on a weekly basis. And make sure you go grab dinner or lunch there soon and tell them that PewterReport.com sent you. And tweet out your pictures, whether your plate's empty, whether your food just arrived, take a picture. Tweet it out at Pewter Report and also at Ford's Garage. They love seeing that, and we do too. So other news this week, Bo Allen took a pay cut, and that was a little bit surprising. We talked about Bo Allen possibly being a salary cap casualty, and that didn't happen. The team kept him, but they took $1 million away from his salary, made him take a pay cut. He's going to be guaranteed $4 million now, and it's very rare that Jason Light asked a player for a pay cut. Usually that doesn't happen, and I think that this was a win-win for both Bo Allen and for the Buccaneers because the Bucs are in a salary cap crunch. They needed that $1 million. It gives them a little bit more flexibility. And I think with Bo, now his $4 million is guaranteed for this year, and he becomes a free agent next year. So the team wouldn't have had any salary cap penalty for cutting him after this season, but now Bo has a chance to either re-sign in Tampa if the Bucs want him and he wants to stay, or he can become a free agent and hit the market next year. So he has some more flexibility and the chance to cash in on another big contract. And we'll have to see how the season plays out. I think Bo is a very good fit as the backup nose tackle behind Vita Vea in this 3-4 defense. He weighs about 325 pounds, so he can anchor well and take on that center in this 3-4 scheme. But interesting move there, just because, again, Jason Light, the reason why he doesn't like to do pay cuts is because it's been his experience that whenever that's happened, the player usually gets a little frosty about it. It's, we like you, but we like you for not nearly as much as we promised you would make. And a lot of times it's, and you've seen it around the league sometimes when these players, we saw it last year with Brent Grimes, you know, he re-signed with the Buccaneers, didn't take a pay cut, but when he was asked to quote unquote do more, he's like, hey, I should be getting paid $13 million instead of $8 million. And it affected his play. And I think that's why Jason Light and Mike Greenberg don't like going to players and suggesting or making them take pay cuts. But I think in this case, there was so much of a win-win in the fact that the rest of his money, the $4 million, got guaranteed. And at Bo's request, they took a year off the contract, that it ends up being a win-win and there's no hard feelings. And at the same time, too, it was a 20% pay cut. It wasn't like half of Bo's pay. So I think that was a part of it as well. So what now for the Buccaneers? Well, I think that they're being patient and they're letting the market kind of slow down and come to them. They're not done by any stretch in free agency. It doesn't mean that they're going to be signing another 3 or 4 players. They might only sign 1 or 2 more players. This coaching staff does like the roster. And you heard Dirk Cutter at the end of his tenure say that talent wasn't the issue in Tampa. And Bruce Arians comes aboard and says the same thing. The talent's not the issue. It's just coaching. That's really what it boils down to. Dirk Cutter's staff wasn't very good. Bruce Arians' staff is supposedly really good. And Bruce is going to come in and wave a magic wand and take a 5-11 roster the last 2 years and turn it into a 9-7, 10-6, 11-5 roster. I'll believe it when I see it. I'm not doubting Bruce per se, but having grown up in Kansas City about 15 miles away from Missouri, kind of adopted the Missouri slogan, which is show me. Missouri is the show me state. So show me, Bruce, show me, new coaching staff, that you can make the difference with this existing roster, because I don't know that the Buccaneers are going to do a lot more in free agency outside of signing maybe 2 or 3 more players. Now, I do think that, let's talk about some of the guys they could go after. Isaiah Crowell was just cut by the Jets. I like him, and I'm not sure if the front office likes him, but I've heard some rumblings that might be the case. The issue last year with the Bucs not going after Isaiah Crowell after he was released by the Cleveland Browns, or I should say wasn't re-signed by the Browns, was that the coaches didn't like Crowell. I don't know if that was the case with the front office. The coaches are gone. And he went on to have a pretty good year with the Jets, averaged 4.8 yards per carry. That's about 1.1 yards more per carry than Peyton Barber did here in Tampa. And I think that Crowell is a similar sized back to Barber, probably 2 inches taller and faster, more explosive. I like him. I would go after him if the price is right. I know the Bucs are still in kind of a tight salary cap situation, even though they freed up the $10 million with Deshaun and they just freed up another million with Bo Allen. I think they need more at the running back position. If I'm Jason Light and Bruce Arians, I can't count on Rojo until he shows me that he can be a legit NFL player, much less an NFL starter. So to me, I would go after Crowell and still draft a running back. Listen, Jason Light flooded the defensive line position last year, right? He not only signed Bo Allen, he signed Mitch Unrein. Then he drafted Vita Vea. And he didn't just sign, trade for Jason Pierre-Paul. He signed Vinnie Curry. And then after that, he picked up Carl Nassib off the waiver wire. So that's 3 new defensive ends. That's 3 new defensive tackles on a team that already had paid Will Golston big money a year prior, even though Golston didn't live up to the contract, and still had Gerald McCoy, you know, who's making $13 million. So Jason Light flooded that position, and it's a good thing he did, because Mitch Unrein never played a down in Tampa after that injury. Imagine if they didn't sign Bo Allen and only signed Mitch Unrein, right? Unrein gets hurt, and he doesn't play a single down for the Buccaneers due to a severe concussion in training camp. Vita Vea gets hurt on the first day of full contact and padded practices in camp, misses all of the preseason and the first three games. This team would have been completely decimated without Bo Allen. And so it's a good thing that, Jason actually added three defensive tackles to the mix. Same thing at defensive end, where Jason Pierre-Paul had to fight through injuries all year, still was pretty effective. But had he not gone out and got Carl Nassib, you saw Vinnie Curry get injured and miss four games with a calf injury and was never really the same when he got back. Imagine this team last year without Carl Nassib. Imagine Jason Light just standing pat and saying, well, we've got Golston and JPP. We've got Noah Spence, who did nothing last year, by the way. And we've got Vinnie Curry. Thankfully, he didn't do that. He flooded the defensive line position with bodies. And as a result, we saw more sacks. And they were able to withstand some of those injuries at certain positions with key players going down. I'd like to see them attack other positions the same way. The running back position needs to be stacked with more talent. Keep an eye on Daryl Henderson in maybe the second or third round. They like him, the kid out of Memphis. He's a very explosive player. But get him and get Isaiah Crowell. And if you have to cut Peyton Barber, or if Peyton Barber's your number three running back, or if Peyton Barber can beat out an Isaiah Crowell or a Daryl Henderson for the starting job, then good on you. I mean, that's what you want. Competition brings out the best. And I would like to see Jason Light flood the positions of offensive line, running back, and even in the secondary, where they need a veteran corner. They need a veteran corner. They need a veteran safety. They also need a veteran offensive lineman. So we'll see how aggressive they get in free agency. I hope that they're not done. They still have some work to do there. But I do believe they will be looking for some bargains, not just in Tier 2 free agency, which we've entered now, that the first wave of free agency is kind of coming to a halt with all the big money deals being spent. But Tier 3 free agency will come after the draft. That's when veterans will get cut because the team has spent first or second round draft picks on positions that those veterans occupy. So those are some things to keep in mind there. One more thing about personnel that I want to talk about is one concern I might have with Bruce Arians and Jason Light, and you see this all the time, general managers are people pleasers typically. They like to give coaches the players that they want. And we saw that in 2014 when Jason Light became a general manager. He was hired by Lovie Smith, so he felt an obligation to give Lovie the players that he wanted. Signed Michael Johnson, signed Josh McCown, got Alteron Verner, signed Anthony Collins. Now, the Collins pick and Verner, those were players that Jason really targeted, but it was a combination of both of those guys, and Lovie certainly got his guys as well. So that can be dangerous sometimes when you want to please somebody rather than just looking for the best available talent and doing it in a very objective fashion. Which brings me to now Bruce Arians and this new coaching staff comes on. And what concerns me is they're new. This is Jason's roster. Bruce and Jason know each other from the Arizona Cardinals days. And so Bruce trusts Jason. And what I'm concerned about is if Bruce was sold, hey, Bruce, listen, I got a roster here that's really good that just hasn't been coached well. I need you and your coaches to come in here and take it to the next level. And all coaches have egos, and Bruce Arians certainly has an ego. And he says, sure, I'll do it. And you know what? Hey, yeah, you're right. You do have a very talented roster here. And the faith in a player like Ronald Jones concerns me because Ronald Jones has done nothing outside of practice footage that I was not able to see because the Bucs practices aren't really open to the media except for calisthenics and a couple of individual drills during the season. My time looking at Rojo was in training camp and also those preseason games where he was getting tackled before he could even get the handoff. So I'm just concerned a little bit, I'm throwing this out there, that Bruce comes in almost as a guest, even though it's his house now, it's still Jason's house, and Bruce is moving in. And so if you've ever brought a roommate on board, whether it's college or whatever, right? There's always kind of like that cordialness that starts, right? Well, it's kind of like, well, I'm the guest in your house, even though I'm now living here, I'm still kind of deferring to you because this is really your house or your apartment. And I just want, I hope that Bruce is being non-cordial with Jason. I hope that he's being a straight shooter and really looking at this talent objectively rather than saying, well, I trust Jason. And, you know, if he says Sean Wilson or Ronald Jones or that they're good players, that we'll give him a shot and we'll coach these guys up and we'll make all the difference in the world. Because the problem is the danger in that overconfidence in this roster that was 5-11 last year is that by the time you figure it out, by the time you're in training camp and the preseason games are over with, and it's September, there's no saviors on the street in September. Your chances at drafting a player are gone because the draft was back in April. Your chances of signing a free agent are gone because those guys, unless you're hopeful in getting a player off another team's roster in these roster cutdowns at the end of the season, and sometimes you luck out and you get a Jacquees Smith. Sometimes you luck out and you get a Carl Nassib, but you can't count on that. You can't bank on that. The time where players are the most available is right now in free agency in the draft. And that's why I'm saying flood the positions. Don't sit there and believe that Sean Wilson can become a player or that Ronald Jones can become a player. Make sure that if they don't, you already have other guys on the roster. Otherwise, it's the Peyton Barber show again. And if Barber goes down, then what? Andre Ellington? Okay, we'll see. So I would be remiss if I didn't just inject right now T.A. Mahoney's as a Pewter Nation podcast sponsor. You know all about T.A. Mahoney's, unless this is your first podcast. And if it is, well, there is a place to go for all of your marine needs in Tampa, and it is T.A. Mahoney's, located off Adamo Drive near downtown. T.A. Mahoney's has got all of your boating needs, all of your marine needs. If you're a fisherman, they got fishing gear there. They've got all of the type of outerwear that has the SPF protection in it. They've got everything from flare guns, of course, flare guns, to CB radios, and everything to make your marine life experience better, whether it's a trailer for your boat or repairs to your boat to make sure that it's seaworthy. The weather is really turning up right now in Tampa. 70s and 80s, spring is here. The pollen's in the air. What better way to escape that than get out in the water and go fishing or go boating and make sure that your boat is in tip-top condition by stopping by T.A. Mahoney's and getting what you need to be ready to hit the water. So T.A. Mahoney's, visit them on the web at tamahoney.com and tell them the Pewter Report sent you. So that'll do it for this edition of the Pewter Nation podcast. We'll have another podcast next week, and I will be joined by Matt Matera, Taylor Jenkins, and maybe Mark Cook. Maybe we'll get the Cookster back on the podcast here. But for right now, I want to say thank you for listening, and we will see you next week as free agency rolls on with another edition of the Pewter Nation podcast and a new mock draft coming up probably Sunday or Monday. So this podcast is being recorded Thursday, so look for that Sunday or Monday on pewterreport.com. We've had some amazing web traffic records set thanks to you guys, so we appreciate you listening to the Pewter Nation podcast and checking out our stories on pewterreport.com. This is Scott Reynolds saying, until next week, thank you for listening to the Pewter Nation podcast.